Welcome to Talk Therapy CPT, a conversation about educating, helping, and connecting individuals to the world of psychology. This podcast is supported and produced by Inner Balance Psychology Center. I would also like to thank our sponsor, Dr. Abel Raffaella, psychologist and author of Breaking the Mirror, a story and guide on how to recognize and deal with narcissists, available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I'm your host, Dr. Dawn Raffa, and joined with me today is my co-host, Anthony Dana. Happy St. Patrick's
Eve. Happy St. Patrick's Eve. Tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day. And yesterday was March 15th. And
it's the Ides of March.
The Ides of March. You know why you always have to beware the Ides of March? I think it refers to the day.
Caesar?
Huh?
Because
Caesar was assassinated. He did not beware the Ides of March.
Mm-mm.
And you see what happened to him.
Right. Yep.
Today, we are going to talk about confirmation bias, which is a term. I think I was looking up something else and then this came up and I read it and interested and I thought it might be a good topic. And you're like, oh, yeah, you know, you see that quite often. And we all do, really, if you really think about it, right?
What, see confirmation bias?
Yeah.
I think we see it and people maybe don't know what the term is. Us in my field see it, obviously, with CBT, people very staunch and rigid in their thinking and their beliefs and finding evidence to support their thinking runs rampant. We all grow up believing our beliefs until someone maybe challenges them or we learn a new belief, but beliefs are really hard to change. The only way in which we're really kind of challenged about theories is maybe in college, you know, when we write a paper, like especially in my field as a psychologist and as a philosophy major, I had to do that, kind of look at another point of view,
you know,
and open your eyes to another way of thinking.
One thing that I thought of immediately was, you know, back when I used to have to write a paper and if I had a thesis, I just knew I had to prove my thesis or back it up. I had to come up. And it's almost like, you know, you're in court. Yeah, you have to come up with evidence to support your thesis to make a case. So then I would look at authors who would support my thesis, you know, if it was a this or that, this president's better than that president or so on. And it reminded me of that, definitely. And what I like to do as a teacher is, okay, give me, and I would give a list of opinions, give me your opinion on, you know, are you pro-life or pro-choice? Are you for the death penalty or against the death penalty? And whatever you are, and I see that you're listed, your assignment is to write a paper on the opposite of what you believe in. And I need you to come up with a paper to argue against your point of view. And it just makes you look at the things differently, which is, like you said, hard for all of us to do because we're so conditioned to think certain ways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And a lot of it is just how we grow up. We might adopt our family's beliefs on things or take a position because it was taught to us in a certain way. Usually our beliefs are based on our experiences in life.
Mm-hmm.
So we come to conclusions about things, right?
Yeah. So I came up with, so once an individual...
Well, explain confirmation.
Once an individual makes a decision, they will look for information that supports it and information that conflicts with it will either be ignored or given very little consideration, or they look for an argument that disproves that belief or information. People given special treatment to information that supports their personal, they are people who give special treatment to information that supports their own beliefs. Wait, sorry, I read that wrong. People do give special treatment to information that supports their personal beliefs. If it's convenient for them, or if it matches what they believe, then that's correct data. That's correct information.
So I'm smiling because of cars. Like that comes to mind of like a favorite car mm-hmm. and how one may only like that car.
Mm-hmm.
And it came up the other day in session. Like this patient said she had to plug in her car, mm-hmm. right? So obviously she has an electric, like a Tesla.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, I'm glad I don't have to do that.
You love Teslas, don't you?
No. Yeah. She asked me like, oh, so do you have another kind of electric or hybrid? I'm like, no. So I just have too many things, you know, like to plug in.
Yeah.
I don't want to plug in the car and all this stuff. And she's like, oh, you're driving this like what internal combustive vehicle? And I'm like, yeah, I love my car. I love my car. Now I have a confirmation bias against Teslas. Now I was in one, so I have experience.
So you do have experience.
So it could be confirmation bias that I already hated them, and then I got in one.
And you really didn't have an open mind. You're like, see, these
suck. It was okay.
Yeah, okay.
However, if I recall, the driver of that Tesla was an Uber in California. I was already pissed at that driver in San Francisco when he picked me up from the airport because he was not accommodating. And I had to go out of my way to find him as opposed to the other way around.
Right.
So I already didn't like him. Okay. And then he drove horrible and I got like nauseous in the car. And I just didn't. I felt like a spaceship.
Well,
so I didn't like being a passenger as a Tesla.
Oh, see, driving one might's a big word.
Well, so no bias against those who own them.
No, however, you're fine people.
They're fine people. There's a lot of incentives at the end of the year to purchase one.
I'm sure there are. The government makes sure.
Well, there was some problems with them, you know, that like in Chicago.
I would see now you would know that because that's your opinion.
Somebody told me.
And you, where did you find that? I need to know where that is.
Yeah, somebody told me. So they were in the winter.
My bias.
In the winter, they were all dying, dead robots, right? They said in the cold. And I'm like,
oh. It makes sense.
I just can't chance it on that.
Anything new, though, right? This is still very, very new. And most people, you know, the older we get, right? We're not as open minded on that. And we shun from, it's new. What is this?
Some people like new stuff. I love technology. I buy new gadgets all the time. Right?
You're not set in your ways in certain things where technology is
with
like...
With gadgets?
Yeah.
Like I only like certain brands of laptop or phone.
Yes. We made that clear.
Yeah.
I have a confirmation bias. I don't know if it's confirmation bias or... So anytime if I hear
you, line, right?
If you tell me something, oh, this movie's great. Okay. Then I talk to that movie's great. And if I hear it too often, I almost don't want to go see it or I want to wait because now it's been built up.
The hype.
And so many times that I...
You want to be surprised?
Not necessarily surprised, but I'm going to go in there thinking, okay, this better be...
Phenomenal.
Amazing, a phenomenal. But then I look at the person too. The person is you know, impressed with somebody tying their shoes. Then I'm like, okay, this movie might not be that great because you impress easily. You know?
So someone who's a more credible source.
Sure. Or like, you know, like, okay, you have the same taste and likes that I do.
Right. Certain people in my life, I would be like, oh, okay, I'll believe that they have the same interest and they would think it's great. Because of XYZ, therefore I would think it's great.
I used to raise my eyebrows when everybody and their mom told me about Ted Lasso. I didn't really know. I didn't do the research. I didn't know what the show was about. I said, oh, Ted Lasso is so funny. Oh, it's so good. And they really wouldn't go into detail.
I was correct. That was amazing.
It is. But I was just kind of like, I mean, I'll maybe watch it eventually. And, you know, but yeah, really, really well. But they weren't very good at describing what it's about.
Yeah,
it is.
I didn't know from what I was told as well what it was about. Although at the time I was like, I don't feel like getting Apple TV.
Yeah, well, there's that too. Yeah.
And I think I was into watching something else instead. So it was on the list of I'll get to it. You know?
Sure.
So yes, people look for evidence to support their beliefs. So that can be in various ways. That can be obviously the internet. You believe, you know, whether it's, I mean, all this is opinion generally, right?
Right.
Like whether it's politics or religion or the best restaurant. I guess people read reviews, but listen, do you do this on Amazon? Like if there's something I really want on Amazon or I'm thinking it's just, I feel like buying it because I don't feel like scrolling. Mm-hmm. I will pick out, okay, here's all the top reviews. That's enough. Good. I'll kind of look at the middle of the reviews and see, but then most of the time I don't care. Right. I'll just return it.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, that's the beautiful thing about Amazon, isn't it?
You can return it. Yeah. Well, within a window.
But
I don't spend all this time like reading reviews. It's just.
With helping
that's biased,
people,
right?
With helping people or helping patients overcome their confirmation bias, because I'm sure that can definitely get in the way of them help, realizing their issues and or what they're going through. To get them to you're essentially playing devil's advocate in a lot of ways, just to, you know, well, you know, challenges. Consider this, or is that person doing that because of this? Or
right. So oftentimes when people come into therapy, they have a lot of biases against others or themselves, right? Coming in with symptoms of anxiety or depression. Maybe their self-esteem is low, so they have negative beliefs about themselves.
They most or likely, an outcome. And most likely they don't realize that they have negative beliefs.
Some do, some it's really on the surface and they okay. know. Other times when I do this technique in CBT called downward arrow. So when we do that, like it could be about a situation. And then I kind of ask questions to dig deeper and it really becomes revealed that it's about themselves being, I am stupid. I am not good enough. I'm a failure. Because we just ask like, well, why is that so bad? Why is it so bad that that happened? And then kind of, what does that mean about you? Mm-hmm. So that could be revealing for people. You know, epiphany, maybe emotional response to that. Other things are external as far as situational. Like remember with people that have anxiety, particularly OCD and generalized anxiety disorder, they live in a world of what ifs. Well, what if this happens? Like they actually believe this thing. You know? So I don't know if like the people who believe in aliens, you think they have a confirmation bias? Like they saw an alien while sitting on their car?
That and, you know, people who...
They find other like-minded people, right? They go online.
Well, and also the people who tell them that you're stupid. You're just right, because you're, you know, how you're telling me I'm wrong. Right. Or, you know.
Well, people with anxiety will have a lot of fears of the world being unsafe. So that's a bias. Like the world is unsafe. And that can become confirmed in their mind, kind of avoidant, right? Like if I avoid the mall, bad things won't happen to me. Well, mm-hmm. bad things aren't happening. Right. And they attribute it to not going to the mall.
Right.
Or if I raise my hand in class, people will laugh at me. So I'm not going to raise my hand. And people,
even though, you know, that happened, I know there are like so many kids in my class and I ask a question and I know they all know the answer and they won't answer. They won't raise their hand. And sometimes, help me out. Just, you know, the answer, right? Come on. Yeah. And they'll like, okay. And I'll raise my hand and answer it.
Yeah. Well, people get stuck in their beliefs because of their behaviors, like, especially if they're avoidant, like they make that belief true. Like if I avoid this, then I'm safe. Well, now I'm safe. I didn't go outside today because a shooting star is going to, you know, kill me. Well, I'm inside. And shooting star didn't kill me today. I'm safe.
So there's that.
Right.
And, well, nobody wants to admit that they're wrong. So
or test it out.
Everybody, like, you know, everybody out. Wants to think that everything that they do is the right decision. And by looking at, you know, I guess that's what my side bias, where people generate and remember reasons to support a controversial issue as opposed to the opposing side. Because if they give some thought or credence to the other side, you know, they might have been wrong all this time. That could be
a little shocking.
That could be shocking. This time,
earth shattering that anything.
Santa Claus doesn't exist. You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or some, you know, some big epiphany, like you said. Mm-hmm. So why? So they're not motivated to look at the other side or consider or be open minded, right?
Well, then there's the idea of, oh gosh, like this whole time I was wrong. That means I'm an idiot or I'm stupid. And
you're actually really smart because you realize you're wrong. They won't look at it like, and it's hard for them to buy into that philosophy.
Well, it's not even right or wrong, and people get caught up with black and white. It's just consider another point of view.
Right.
Like maybe there's a more efficient or a better way to think about it.
But the fact that you're smart enough to consider a different perspective, I mean, I think that's intelligence. To be smart enough to think, hey, you know what? Let me see what they're getting at. Have anything, you know, anything. A new perspective, this or that.
Like being open-minded about
it. Open-minded.
It's a sign of intelligence.
It's all about...
I think close-minded people.
Well, that's another topic, isn't it? Like, if you're open-minded, are you not as intelligent as somebody who is open-minded? I don't know. Because if you do know a lot, you could be pretty close-minded. I mean, you know, I don't know how open-minded, say... Well, you know, Einstein seemed like a free spirit. You know, so I don't think he's a good example, but, you know,
well, as curiosity. It's also using mindfulness skills and being open-minded. There's something called beginner's mind. So approaching a situation as if you've never been in it before, a child mind.
Yeah.
I think that's helpful in life.
Having a little bit of that.
Not being so rigid.
Curiosity, healthy curiosity to an extent, right?
Yeah, it could get you in trouble.
Right, but if it's
like my dog.
How so?
She's curious and she she gets into stuff and eats things she shouldn't eat.
Yeah, are you okay? Curious or adventurous? Depends on how you want to frame that one. Yeah. somebody who I'm looking forward to learning about, knowing more about. Again, I remember reading about him, or when I teach World War II, his name comes up. This Oppenheimer fellow, and I'm looking forward to seeing the movie.
The movie, because it just won the.
Yeah, I want to see how open or closed minded maybe he was. You know, from what I get, the movie. Kind of, it seems like, and again, in the trailer, it looks as though.
Well, one of my favorite actors is in it.
Yeah, yeah.
With Peaky Blinders.
Pretty blue eyes.
Cillian Murphy, right?
Yes. And how he is an agonizing, like, do I really want to build this thing? Like, what am I doing?
Yeah, what am I doing for
that? Yeah, sure. Let's see, what else? Oh, the importance. So I have here a little mention in my notes. A confirmation bias, important implications, including this one. So here's a great example of how dangerous it is. Including medicine, law, and interpersonal relationships. Doctors who have confirmation bias are dangerous more than others. They have a preliminary hunch regarding a diagnosis of a medical condition early in the treatment, and they might not be open-minded to other things that could be causing pain or discomfort.
And they miss something.
And they miss it because it's just like, okay. And you know what it is? It's convenient. It's just, you just want to think certain things and just move on.
Yeah, absolutely. So like a doctor could say, well, that's a common symptom and I'm not going to order further testing like a CT scan or an MRI when actually there could be something bigger going on, right? Or a medication.
Their hunch can interfere with their ability to assess information and make an alternative diagnosis, which might be more likely.
You know what I've seen with some of my, over the years, some of my patients that have an anxiety disorder, when the doctors see that they may take medication for that, or they have that listed as a diagnosis, they get dismissed as being wrong or hysterical or hypervigilant or hypochondriac, and they may miss something. Actually, I've had that happen with some women, particularly women.
Right. Well, yeah. A lot of doctors, medical doctors, if they do have a revelation, they might be worried about a lawsuit. So there's always that consideration. Well, like, yeah, I diagnosed you with this, and because I missed it 6 months later, you're in a worse situation, mm-hmm. and you can come up with an argument where it's my fault because, you know, that 6 months was crucial. I don't know.
I used to have a woman that had marks on her arm from suicidal attempts, right? And she had a lot of medical stuff going on, and she would go to the hospital, and immediately they would see those scars mm-hmm. and completely dismiss her with her pain or with, you know. So that's a confirmation bias. This person's just wacky.
Right.
Because yeah. She was suicidal. I mean, because it's clearly suicidal marks. Mm-hmm. It's not just like a fall off your bike, you know.
Well, and so that brings to, I guess, this psychologist I found online, Daniel Kahneman. Not a good word for any profession. You're sort of con man. I mean, he's 90 years old, still alive, born and bred in Israel. And he has two parallel systems for dealing with this. The first system of thinking is a quick automated cognition that covers general observations and unconscious information. This can lead to making decisions effortlessly without conscious thought because we're in a hurry. And I just want to let's
come to a conclusion.
Don't tell me, you know, this. Don't tell me about the labor pains. Just give me the baby. Mm-hmm. They're just very matter of fact, and let's get moving. And then the other
is this the heuristics, right?
Sure.
Short rules.
And the other way of thinking is deliberate thinking that can override system one, but that demands time and effort. So that with self reflection, careful system two thinking may be able to account for those biases and correct ill-made decisions in the first place. But taking the time to do that is easier said than done, I think, because a lot of us like to think we are right about a lot of things just through our history, of, oh, yeah, see, right again, that was equals Y. Mm-hmm. And
when they create these rules in order to get through the world
quicker, just they think they're being, they're...
Well, it takes up mental space.
Functional, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, in honor of the Oscars, uh-huh. I have a game.
Okay.
And I have four questions, Oscar trivia, and figured I'd do that as a little, again, a game to end the show. So the first question about the Oscars is, which of the following actors holds the record for having the most Oscars for Best Actor with three? They have three Best Actor statues. They are, and one of these is correct answer, Tom Hanks, Anthony Hopkins, Daniel Day-Lewis, or Jack Nicholson. Three Oscars.
They're all very talented men, so you didn't make it obvious.
The other three have two, so yeah. I didn't throw in, Gary Coleman.
Todd Bridges. All right, so I'm going to complete. So my original guess is Jack Nicholson, but based on your body language and the way in which you looked at me.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to say, which I'm probably wrong based on my Daniel Day-Lewis.
You are correct. It was Day-Lewis.
I read your body language.
What body language? I wasn't doing anything.
Because you said his name and looked at me.
I didn't realize I was doing that. Oh boy, I'm in trouble. Okay, so you are correct.
And read minds.
Yes. You're using your brain power. Will Ferrell and Ron Burgundy. Mm-hmm. Was it his ex-wife's new boyfriend?
Yeah.
Was it a psychologist?
Yeah.
Get out of there. So yeah, he won.
Oh, for what?
Well, My Left Foot, 1989. Lincoln.
Oh, Lincoln.
And there was, a Western, the movie where he says, I drink your milkshake. I forget the name of it. I never saw it, but I think I want to see it now because I like milkshakes, although he's going to drink. Jack Nicholson has three Oscars, but two for Best Actor and one for Best Supporting Actor. And then Hanks has two for Best Actor, Philadelphia. And Scott back to back. Mm-hmm. And then Anthony Hopkins has two, or obviously Silence of the Lambs. And then he has another one called The Father that he won in the last, I think, 5 or 6 years. That didn't escape me. I didn't even watch it.
Our conversation before about people winning Oscars that depict mental illness or physical illness.
Yes.
So he won, and he was obviously a sociopath.
There you go. I think there's something to that. You can win Best Actor. Not many normal, quote unquote, normal, but just.
What's a tricky role to pull off?
Yes, it is. But
like that movie I watched the other day from the Oscars, it was on Hulu, the Emma Stone movie she just won, which is kudos to her. She did a phenomenal job.
Okay, so.
She was intellectually disabled.
I just think that that's just. I don't know. I mean,
seems like it's a lot.
It seems like that's a good. Oh yeah, we're gonna win it. Oh, and he's playing somebody who's has a disability. We gotta
That could not be the reason for doing it because Leonardo DiCaprio played lots of people with disabilities, like Shutter Island, and didn't win.
Gilbert. Oh my God. Well. Okay. That they totally
hit it. Of course they did.
I think. I'm mad. Of course they did.
Departed. He had PTSD. Obviously,
but everybody was kind of mental. Yeah. Number two. Okay, good job. I have to watch my body language.
I just gave my tail away. It's like a poker tail.
I tell you what. What a perfect segue. How many times was Leonardo DiCaprio nominated for an Oscar? Mm-hmm. It could be for Best Actor or Best Supporting Actor. And that obviously includes, there's at least one time because he didn't win.
Yeah.
But you didn't like the role that he wanted. Mm-hmm. But so how many times in altogether?
Yeah. Okay. So Oh, do I have the multiple choice?
Wait, one. Maybe not.
Saying it out loud.
Okay, the least.
I knew that. So there's no multiple choice for this?
No, you just have to pick a number. How many times was he nominated?
How many times was he nominated?
Nominated.
Five.
Six. Very close. Five times for best actor, and then once for best supporting actor. He was nominated for best supporting actor. And then he was nominated and lost for The Aviator.
Mm-hmm.
He was nominated and lost for Blue Diamond. For some reason, now this is the one that I'm like... Blood Diamond. I said Blue. And then The Wolf of Wall Street. So you're going to give him a nomination for that, but not Shutter Island?
I know.
Okay. Or even The Departed. He wasn't nominated for The Departed. He was Revenant. He won. And then he was also nominated for Once Upon a Time in America.
Hollywood.
I typed up America. God, I am set in my titles. That was another movie, though, by the way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what Quentin was playing off of, that title.
Hollywood.
Okay, good. All right. So and that was close. And technically, you're right for the best actor. Third question. This actor has the most I'll give you some hints. This actor has the most consecutive best actor nominations, with three in a row. The years were 1951, 1952, and 52, 53, 54. And he finally did win one. And then his career went to oblivion in the 60s. Then he came back in the 70s with an iconic role.
I need the multiple choice.
You'll get it. I'm telling you, if you really think hard enough, you're going to fail this.
I know who you're talking about.
Okay.
What's his name?
What's his name?
Blank on his name.
What's his
the
name?
Godfather. Yeah, the Godfather.
The Godfather. What's the Godfather? The actor's name.
Oh my God, I'm totally blanking.
I know. We have those moments.
Mom's spot. That guy.
Marlon Brando.
Mm-hmm. Marlon. Of course.
That'd be great if we had like mystery guests. Mystery guest, can you tell me what you had for breakfast?
I have some scrambled eggs.
Oh, it's about the Godfather.
Damn it. I thought I was masquerading my voice.
Okay. Fourth question. Last question. Katharine Hepburn holds the record for most best actress awards with, and give me a number, many. Now, understand, it's always going to be in single digits.
I know. All right. Six.
Four.
Four
best actress winners. That's okay. But take a look at listen to the years. Talk about longevity.
Over a
first one was 1933.
Oh, okay.
Then 1967, 1968, and 1981.
Big gaps. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, but just the fact that she could still bring it.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm sure she was nominated a few times here and there. Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I messed this up. This was going to be who has the most best actress awards for? And the so I put Katharine Hepburn, Meryl Streep. Anyway, you might have went with Meryl Streep, which I would have went with.
Probably.
And but he has a record, and I'll just tell you this one. I was just like, wow, do you know that Meryl Streep, for the category of acting, whether it's best actress or best supporting actress, was nominated the most amount of times than any actor or actress? 21.
Wow.
21 times.
That's a lot of times.
Yeah.
That's a lot of disappointment then.
That's just it, because I think she only won.
You get your hopes up, right?
Well, out of 21 times, she won, I think. She won two best actresses, and I think one. I would have had like more than that. It's just, I don't know. It's like, it's kind of weird.
The ratio is
we're going to put she as a nomination because, of course, it's also.
Wow.
You know, I don't know.
Well, she won for Fatal Attraction, I imagine. Awash.
No, you're thinking of
Glenn Close.
Glenn, yeah, Glenn Close.
Oh yeah, never mind.
Yeah. So anyway, but that's my little Oscar game. So you fared very well.
Yeah. Not bad.
Okay.
All right. So I guess we'll be mindful today of all of our confirmation biases on things.
Yes.
Such as the best, you know, tequila bar, best place to get coffee, the best place for travel.
Motorola good, Tesla's bad.
Okay, Motorola.
Oh.
I don't have a Motorola phone.
What do you have?
Samsung. I have an Apple iPad.
Pickleball good.
Tennis bad.
Tennis bad. Horse racing bad. Horses are good.
Horses are good, yeah. People that live in certain places act a certain way. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm not saying this is mine.
Okay. Okay,
people will say that. People in the South, people in the North, people out West.
Okay. Well, here's one for you. Here's your confirmation.
People in Denmark.
Are way okay. Back. So you want to, you want to go, you know, okay. Good Italian food, you know.
Oh, there's none.
Well, yeah, well, not well, it's maybe the same, but if you see a vowel at the end of the owner's name, okay.
It's family owned.
You know, it's the Smith's Italian restaurant. Yeah. Smith.
But it depends where it's located, right?
Could be. Yeah. If it's the middle of New York City, you know, in Little Italy, got a shot, maybe.
Then where else would you, where would you not have Italian?
Nebraska.
Yeah. Midwest.
Anything west of the Mississippi, the water's too awful.
Yeah. And even like pizza out west.
Oh, is, even in the South.
They can't get the dough to rise.
Somebody put on the Vero Beach website, because you know me, I love Vero Beach and in Florida. And so somebody put, where can I find good pizza around here?
In Vero?
And I, yeah, and I'm like, you're in Florida. You can't.
To find good pizza.
I got a bunch of less. Yeah, say amen. You're not in the Northeast or Chicago. I think I said that. I said you're not in the Northeast or even Chicago.
Chicago gets a pass.
They get a pass because they got their deep dish thing, and I like it. It's pretty good, you know. Apples and oranges. It's not bad. Some people are like, oh, that's not real pizza. It's good.
Well, seafood. Where would you eat seafood in the Midwest?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I tell you what. What kind of delicacy is the Midwest known for?
Beef.
Yeah. They got, you know.
Potatoes and corn.
Potatoes, corn. Definitely.
Buy some good corn.
Pork.
There's good pork there.
People are yelling at the, you know, their answers out loud.
Midwest has stuff.
We have this and that. And you know, guys don't
biscuits
know us.
Biscuits and gravy are all right.
Biscuits and gravy. For some reason, they can do biscuits, but they can't do pizza. Pizza. No.
In the South.
The water out there.
Or in the South.
But yeah, or in the South. Well, the South too. Yeah. You know, but definitely.
Yeah, there's bias.
Barbecue.
Yes.
In Midwest South, Kansas is known for its barbecue.
Right.
You know,
right.
Memphis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we'll be mindful today of the things we're biased about.
Definitely.
And our judgments.
Try to. But we'll be self-aware, like mindfulness, like you said. We'll be mindful. We might not do anything about it, but we're mindful.
We might not change our thinking about it. All right. As always, thanks for listening to our show. Catch all of our episodes and more at www.innerbalancepsychology.com or talktherapycbt.com. Email us if you have any questions, info@innerbalancepsychology.com. And remember to stop it and give yourself a chance.